come this morning. This is a really cool time. We had it last year, and it's nice to be in a context where it's a little bit closer. We can ask some more like direct questions. And really, my heart is, I love you guys. I love this time because I get to see so many of you together, and it's really a blessing to me. That's probably why I do it, actually, just to bless myself. <It's> like, yeah, but really, I want you guys just to be able to walk out blessed. Like, it's cool because there's so many different contexts with David Sent this year, and so many different places we get to meet with the Father and meet with his family and other people. And really, like, something that I mentioned is that all of you, I know, are invested back home, like, from wherever you came from, like, in people's lives and in communities of worship, worship nights, and churches. And so that's really something I wanted to focus on this morning, is how to bless you guys in, like, tangible, practical ways, stuff that's been on your heart, like, glean from these guys' experience. And so we can send you back, and and you can just keep on plowing wherever you are. And it keeps on coming up that, I mean, like, David's Tent, my goal is for it to be like less of a 3-day event and more of just a culture change, you know, in an entire country. So did you guys have anything? Open up. You good?
You guys are heroes. Did all of you guys take a set? Do a set? Raise your hand if you did sets. Okay, I have a real cool quote to read over you guys. I was just so inspired the other day. I was thinking about how you guys are so amazing. And this is the quote that I got. Where is it? Hold on, it's coming. Oh, here it is. We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams. World losers and world forsakers upon whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. That's you guys. I didn't write that, but it's good.
Thanks, Sean.
That's Shaughnessy, by the way.
So one of the ways I want to do this morning is I want to be able to make it open for like a lot of questions that we have, but I'm just going to kind of start in some direction. And then I think it'd be really cool if, like, after they share, if we just have like one or two follow-up questions, because I'd love to keep things focused so it doesn't go off on too many different tangents or too many like deep theological things, because I really want people to walk out feeling like more prepared and blessed and like, oh, what was he talking about, and like more questions. So yeah, and I think something that's cool is like all these guys represent something different, you know, of like a different part of the church. And so it's exciting to have them all on the same room. So I'll open it up, and then after they get through sharing, just raise your hand, and we'll have like one or two follow-up questions, and we'll just kind of go from there. So there's not like too much of a planned direction where I want things to go, because I want you guys to be able to feel like you can kind of direct the conversation as well. But please keep your questions pretty like answerable and not too abstract, not too swirly, and we'll go from there. So something that's been on my heart that I'll kind of open up with is the idea of inheritance and the idea of like what makes things sustainable, you guys. What makes things sustainable, you know, outside of festivals like this and outside of just worship nights. So I'm just going to open up with one like big question is like, what do you think is the biggest thing that's kept your ministry and your community like sustainable from like the beginning of your time with ministry or communities and to now? Like, what's been like one thing that's really kept you going and kind of boiled down and you keep on pressing into that also helps you like see into the future and know this is the thing that'll carry me, you know, 10, 20, 50 more years to the next generation? Yeah.
Too big, too abstract?
Oh, yeah. We're good.
Okay. Great question.
Who's going to shoot first? Yeah, I think for all of us, we're walking out community in a different way. For us, we have the privilege of our band. Most of our band lives in community with us, actually on our farm. Some of them live off the farm. So for us, we spend as much time around the table as we do on a stage. So living life like that, and that's a privilege for us to be able to do that with a band. And just having really beautiful rhythms of knowing how to process trips. We try to make it a beautiful, habit of, after any ministry trip or after any moment like this, getting the privilege of leading worship, to come back as a family and pour thanksgiving on the Lord. And just like the, remember the story of the 10 lepers and the one leper who returned back to Jesus with a thank you. And for us, it's really important to close out trips back around the feet of Jesus, telling him thank you that we got to do this. And that really breaks off a lot of entitlement. It breaks off a lot of cynicism. It breaks off, because you can walk away from different things, but we, without your eyes on Jesus and really walking away, pouring our thank yous on the Lord, it's kept it really sustainable. It's really simple, really practical, but it's an amazing thing to do with your team.
I would say for sustainable, the keeping things more unpredictable instead of routine is I think our tendency, even in the Bible, biblical history, is to try to create routine. You know, like I said last night, like Israel doesn't want God; they want a king. But the king actually didn't make them more sustainable. So the unpredictable actually is what's going to sustain you longer. Like accepting that place of trust and unpredictable is what is actually sustainable, because that is your future, whether you try to make it routine or not. Your future is going to be a future of having to learn to trust. So what is sustainable is learning how to trust and keeping things, you know, being okay with God leading you in unpredictable places. And routine is not sustainable, because that's not God's future for you or me, to just do the same thing over and over again. The future is unpredictable. And that's the beauty of God. It's the mercy of God, actually, in our lives, is that He is leading us, all of us, to a place of trust in Him. And so that's what I find. Whenever I try to lock into routine, I always find in the end that it's unsustainable. And so just keeping yourself in that place of the unpredictables, it's a great and place of trust, really, right? So
it's really... I think what we've noticed, I'll speak specifically to how many you guys live in Europe or the UK. Raise your hand. Okay, good. I feel like there's like you guys really fight in like an isolationist thing in some of your communities. Like, any Londoners here? I don't even know how you guys survive in community. I mean, it's like crazy. Like, to take a train an hour and a half and pay £100 to go visit somebody. I mean, it's really like it's really intense to build community in your context. And I would just say this. I feel like even one of the cool things about David's Tent that I love is that it feels like kind of more than just an event. It feels kind of like a family reunion. Do you guys ever feel that? Like, it feels kind of like, oh my gosh, these guys from Scotland and these guys from, you know, Holland and these guys from Germany and these guys from, you know, from Wales. Like, we're all kind of on this parallel journey, and then we get to hang out together and drink coffee and stay up and run through the rain together. And but I feel like that the Lord's really shifting things, where I think we're moving into a season of family over function.
Yeah.
And to where the functionality of what we do as prayer and worship people comes out of our connection as a family. So, like, I think in prior days, especially speaking with worship and prayer people that are very, like, agenda-driven, and we got to break off the spirit, you know, and we, like, unite around the function of intercession or the function of, practically speaking, day-night worship or a burn or doing 2 hours of worship, and we gather around that function, and we're like, well, now we got to be family, you know? But I feel like that there's going to be, like, I feel like the oil of, like, unity and love is going to come out of the family connection that then leads to the function. So we want to be together because we love each other. And, oh, by the way, we want to take over the world, you know? Or, oh, by the way, we want to change our city. Or, oh, by the way, you know, we want to see the name of Jesus exalted day and night. And I feel like that's way more sustainable. And just speaking, like we were together on Monday, we'll do our burn gathering where we gather all of our leaders together. And like a lot of us have been tracking together for, you know, 6-7 years, and now we have kids, and like it's this ever expanding family of people. But we know we're going to be together this year. We know we're going to be together next year. We know we're going to be together the year after that. And we know that there's functional stuff that's happening in between, but we're committed to each other as families. Like I'm committed to Sean Gooch back there because I love his family and his wife from France. She's so swirly, like, you know, and his kids, you know, and he, and the function of his prayer expression in Romford comes out of that connection in, as a family. So,
does anyone have any follow up questions to that? Just like sustainability community. Yeah, go ahead. And these two. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry, just wondering how you keep that connection with the Lord, because obviously you're going to be on the stage every night and stuff. Do you have people that speak into your life as you're traveling around, or like on Skype, or I don't know, like, how does that work out?
Well, this is the most amazing thing, is that you don't, God wants to keep relationship with me and you. So God isn't the one with the relationship problem. Yeah. Like, it's really more like just denying or missing his advances towards us every day. So it really, for me, there's so many other issues. That's never been an issue for me, ever. Like, if you just have an open heart, you know, to see, generosity is actually biblically, it's actually two flows. We think of generosity as giving, but generosity is also receiving what's being given. This is like Jesus, it's not hospitality actually, that when Jesus receives the widow's mite, that's actually generosity. It's actually the concept of receiving the beautiful, rich thing that's being given in this moment by that widow's mite. So for me, every moment of my day, I just know God is here. So relationally, you go around the world, in every place I'm like, wow, Lord, I'm going to see you from a completely different vantage point. So it just develops my keen sense of awareness. To give you an idea, I was in Minnesota, where I came from. These boys took us, my son and I, out carp fishing with bow and arrow, right? And
they don't like weapons.
I know. I don't like weapons either. Sean's into war and weapons and stuff. I'm more of a peaceful guy. But and then so no, he's a true American. Yeah, no, just kidding. No, so. And so my son and I have the bow and arrow, right? And we've got it. And we're holding it. We're up on these things. And the guys would just go like, boom! And they'd hit these carp. And I couldn't even see them. Right? I couldn't even see them. And there's a 40-pound carp. Done. They're reeling it in. I couldn't even see them. And I realized on that boat, I'm like, dude, that's exactly what people feel like when they're around me. And I say, did you just see Jesus? Like, they've trained their eyes for the last 15 years to find carp. And I can't even see them. And there they are. They just shot them.
Fish.
It's a fish, you know, like a big fish. And they're bow hunting them. And I think sometimes we think that this God relationship is like, go listen to some guy preach. I could hear somebody preach all day about carp hunting and never know how to see the fish. So you have to train yourself to see it. And you have to do it over and over and over again. And then you have to miss them and realize how you missed them. And your eyes, and get your eyes to adjust quickly. And vision to adjust quickly. And so I think that's the key, is number one, putting yourself in a position like that song I sing, Whisper, Jesus, when you speak to me, I hope I'm listening to you. It's flipping that idea of, Jesus, I hope you're speaking to me because I'm listening to you. That's not what I say. It's, Jesus, when you speak to me, because I know you're speaking to me today in some way, I hope I'm listening. So putting yourself in a position every day where there's this incredible expectancy and hope that through new relationships, through new experiences, I'm going to see the Lord. I'm out carp hunting and all of a sudden there's a picture of the kingdom. Wow, that's great. Like, they've trained themselves to know how to spot a carp, and in the same way I train myself to see, to find the Lord in strange things. So
It's actually for you, Jonathan, and you, Melissa. I know she's not here, but Rob and I came across your style of worship about 3 years ago now, and we just really felt like we connected with you. And at this season in our lives, we're taking a step back and we're just really asking God what you want for us for the next season. We've been like leading worship for ever, and we love it. It's our very essence of who we are, and at the moment, sorry, we feel like we're supposed to be pastoring a church, and we see you and we see how you are, and it's just so beautiful. Yeah, it's just hard in sort of English life to feel that we could ever have a community like you have. It just doesn't ever feel like there's people that would want that as a day-to-day life. It just seems so different. It seems like worlds apart. And just my question is, like, how do you sort of like have the day-to-day life of how you are in your community? I know you homeschool your children and we don't. And like my husband's, he's in a Christian school and I'm in like a secular sort of like, I'm a hairdresser and I sort of like am out in the like day-to-day with people on the school run who have got no like, you know, thoughts of God in their lives, and I just try and bring God into their day-to-day lives, and I think it would just be great to have a sort of community, but I don't want like something that's so in that you don't look out. Do you have times when you're like in the sort of community, as in outside of your community?
Yeah, I think
I don't know what my question was really. Sorry.
I think it could be a bit easy to look at me and Melissa's life from looking at our school website and maybe listening to an album, and you actually don't hear all the takes in between, and you don't see all the messy moments in between. Community is a very messy thing. And community for the sake of community is its biggest enemy. When your goal for community is community, it will fold in on itself. When you have community after you've had communion and you're loving each other from the overflow of your relationship with Father, it's amazing. It kind of like in our marriage, I love Melissa out of my overflow of friendship with the Father, and she loves me out of overflow of being loved by Him. And if we didn't have that, I don't know how we could be married. And it's how Adam and Eve's first moment was. Adam spent this whole moment with just him and God, and then he was asleep, And then Eve had this moment where it's just her and God. And they met out of their overflow. The first community, a man and a woman, loved each other out of their overflow of friendship with Father. I believe it's the key to community for us to, we are loving each other out of the overflow of it. But it's really tense. There's so much mess. We've failed at community so many times. We've made so many mistakes. I think the grounding point for us is we're dreaming massive big dreams, but we're building really small, and we're building really faithfully with the small things that He's put in our hands. And in each step, we want to build with excellence and integrity. Our whole community started with one guy living with us, and me and Melissa and my mom and dad, you know, and we're still patiently growing right now. So despise not the days of really small beginnings. And for this season, for you guys too, just our community comes out of a healthy place for me and Melissa. So just bless your marriage that you guys could rediscover your first love and the joy of why you lead worship and why you want this. So, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, if you don't mind being a little bit vulnerable, how many people, like, first of all, you raise your hand if you feel like you are involved in community, and then I'll ask if you feel like you're actually isolated. Just in this room, how many people feel like they're actually involved in the community here? So first, like, you feel like you're involved in the community back home. Okay. And everyone who feels like they're isolated as well? Okay. Okay, good. Really good. Okay. That's really encouraging to see. Yeah. Cool. Let's see. I wanted to change directions to kind of get a good range of questions. One of the questions that I feel like is kind of a theme of Davidson this year is like stepping out and more risk. And so I wanted to hear from these guys what it's like to actually step out into a place where failure is like a real reality. So like whether that's like during worship or whether it's in your communities outside of the stage. But like, could you give us like some examples and even like what it takes to actually step out and like to step out and actually put yourself in a place where failure is like a real possibility and you are relying on the Lord. And I'd love to hear some quick stories about like times you have like failed kind of in the eyes of men and what that's looked like and how you've recovered from that. Because I think failure is a pretty big reality for a lot of us. And so that's why I wanted to hit on it. Yeah.
I think Jason has amazing stuff on. Now, on amazing stuff on risk, that's what his question was. And he is like, I love his teaching on risk. But I'll just say this. I do feel like that's I mean, you know, that's the way that you spell faith. Like, that's just part of what we're buying into is a life of risk and unpredictability. And I feel like sometimes in this culture, in our cultures where everything's predictable and where everything is safe, like, caution is the biggest enemy against the worship movement in the UK. Caution. You know, and God is like, God is wild. You know, have you guys like read Revelation 4? Like, just really read it, or Ezekiel, or have you read like Isaiah 6 or some of these stories where they actually see what's happening around the throne and they actually are beholding it? It is like crazy. Like, there's nothing tame about it. There's nothing, you know, and I just feel like a lot of what I'm even seeing that I love so much about David's Tent and about what you guys are doing in your own communities is you're breaking through those limitations, you know, and you're pushing past the conveyor belt of cultural norms and moving into like fresh and new things, you know. And I'll just say personally, I've like missed it a lot. Like, I actually remember one time I was playing with Jason, like, I think I was like 16, and I'll never forget this. He invited me up. He's like, come and do this song, you know. And I came up, and it was like this Holy Ghost moment, you know. He had cultivated this atmosphere of like awesomeness, you know. And I step up there, and I was like a really bad guitar player. I knew like three chords, and like if to do the fourth one, I would have to like move my finger, you know. And I started out this song, and the moment, I don't know if you remember this, it was so horrible. Like, it was like the chord, it was like, I was supposed to be playing like an A minor, but my pinky got trapped. I think it was like a demon or something, you know, on the bottom string. And it was just like, it ended up being some minor six, like sus or something chord that was like, it was so bad, you know, and I was so embarrassed. But there's some of those moments where like, I could just feel like the Lord kind of in, you know, where it's like, the Holy Spirit's not too fragile that he's going to get scared away if we play the wrong chord, you know? And so for me, there's been a journey that was a glaring, I was like so embarrassed. I think I went away and cried. And then Jason made fun of me and I felt even worse. No, he didn't make fun of me. I'm just joking. But I do feel like for you guys, like you are the risk takers. You know, like you are the ones in your cities and communities, and I just feel like there's great courage like that's gonna come on you in those moments of risk. And so anyway, I'll let Jason tag along, and you got the best stuff on risk, man.
Yeah, but he says he wants to keep it real tight, so I'm gonna, you know, so real practical, just really practical. I have 4 children. This is just reality, guys. Progressively, each new child has learned to walk and ride their bike faster than the previous. My son Oliver is already riding his bike. He's our youngest. And the reason is because with each child, their mother and father is less afraid to let them fall. This is all that needs to be said about it, guys. They ride their bike faster because we're not scared to let them fall. This is the reason that elders in Western civilization are not honored. We're scared of failure because we have no elders and we have no second gazers. Second gazers look at life, right? And they say, no. Death isn't a grave. Death is a doorway. Right? Death is a doorway. Second gazers teach us, no. Falling is learning to stand. So, and it's not just with children. It's with each 3 or 4 years of my journey with Jesus as a worshiper, I keep coming to these places where I feel like God's saying, you want to learn to ride something new? Do you want to go somewhere? And all of a sudden, I'm less afraid of the failure because I know I'm not falling, I'm learning to stand. It's a perspective change. If you want to go from a piano to a guitar, new levels of glory are always a step down before they're a step up. That's just the way it is. So many of us, I want to go from right here. You know, if there was a hill, you see this hill behind us? See that? If there was a hill over here behind us, and Jesus said you want to get to that hill, young culture would teach you that there's a bridge to it. If you just step out in faith, a bridge will appear and you'll walk over to that next hill, that new level of glory. But that's not the way it works with Jesus, because what Jesus will say to you is, Jason, bridges are man-made. I didn't make bridges, I made valleys. So you don't get to that new place of glory without going through a new valley. But Jason, don't be scared of the valley, because the valley's where all the life is. It's where all the growth is. It's where you're going to learn something new. And people might even think, whoa, you're way down in that valley. Like, we think of valley as the valley of the shadow of death. You know what I mean? But I will fear no evil. Why? Because what? Because not only is Jesus with you, And not only is he for you, he's excited for you. Because you're learning something new and you're growing. The mountaintop just gives you perspective on your journey. But it's not where you grow. You don't grow on the mountaintop. You just see where you're headed and you see where you've come from. The valley, that's where you grow. That's where you learn. That's where all the fruit is. That's where all, you know what I mean, as you're going down there. So each one of our children, though, practically, we've learned to, you know, they've learned to ride their bike faster and they've learned to walk faster because we're not coddling them, we're letting them fall.
Come on. Somebody want to get saved? That was amazing. I just got delivered. So I think on a practical way, tying some of the failure and risk back into community as well. One of the things we say in our community and in our team, we have a core team, and we say we're all wonderfully ungifted, and we all really need each other. And there's areas, if you tried to throw me on the drums, it wouldn't be a risk, it'd be a disaster. And I am wonderfully ungifted, and I need a drummer to be on our team with us. You know, I need a piano player. I can't play that well. And we need those around us. But also developing in your community, like what I was talking about earlier, we'll come back after a ministry trip and we'll thank the Lord, but we'll also process the trip together. We'll go, what was amazing about that trip and what can we learn from so we don't make some of those mistakes again and we can go from glory to glory. And I've invited the close community around me to speak into my life. You know, kind of like that thing where you're out on a date and you don't realize it, but you have broccoli in your teeth, you know? And you go to the bathroom and you're like, oh my gosh, how long has this been in my teeth? And we're so isolated and we want to do it so perfect, but we don't invite anybody into our space to speak into our life. And I know I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if I didn't have those around me who fought for my greatness and who I've dared to say, all right, I'm going to step out from behind these fig leaves of just my religious mess, and I want you to speak into my life. And I've had songs that I've written that I didn't think were that great, and I've brought them to the community. And I'm like, guys, I'm not sure if this is a great song or not. I just feel so close to it. Can you guys, like, tell me what you hear in it? And they'll hear and see stuff in the song that I didn't see. And then they cause the song to go places that I could have never caused it to go by myself, right? Oh, that's good. And I think Abraham Lincoln said that thing where how much you can, we talked about Abe Lincoln last night. It's amazing how much you can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit.
Oh, man.
You know, and for us as a community, we've brought so many of our songs to the table, and I know that our album, our last album, On the Shores, would not be what it was without Molly Skaggs, like, pouring all of her heart into it. Joel Case pouring all of his heart into it. Jake Stevens pouring all of his heart into it. And they didn't care. They didn't care if me and Melissa got the credit. I mean, they didn't care if they got the credit. They wanted me and Melissa to get it. Like, they wanted to lay their life down. And they fought for our greatness. In the same way, we want to fight for their greatness. But they also go, hey, there's some broccoli in your teeth right here. And I love you enough to, you actually really need to grow on your instrument in these areas if you want to carry the weight of what the Father has for you in this next season. Does that make sense? But you have to give people permission to speak that into your life, you know? And you got to move beyond just the first date with your community and move into a place of, like, I want you to call out my greatness, and I also want you to call out my blind spots. They're blind spots because you can't see them. And you need those around you to point them out and to speak into your life and call out your greatness.
One last thing I think is important about success versus failure is how bad we are at knowing when we're a success and when we're a failure. And often, when we feel like we're failing, we're actually succeeding. It's a really weird irony. I remember sitting with Melody Green and talking about Keith and her telling me how many times he was such a perfectionist. I mean, he was such a perfectionist, he just got rid of his whole band and just played by himself. That's a perfectionist. And he was up on the stage one night, she said, and he felt like he bombed the whole service. It was horrible. He missed notes. He couldn't play. He felt like he couldn't play. She said, he stormed off the stage, and he went to the back room, and she met him in the back room, and he was so frustrated with the evening. And she said to me, I said, Keith, nobody's left the room. Like, people are out there. You just stormed out the stage. Nobody's even left the room. They're in there. Some of the people are laying on the ground. Some people are just sitting there. Some people are weeping. There are old men in this room that are crying tonight, Keith. And he thought it was horrible. He was embarrassed. He was ashamed. He was angry. And yet, somehow, it was an amazing spiritual success. Right? And then she said, and then a few weeks later, we'd be somewhere else, and he'd think it was amazing. And then he'd say, wow, that was amazing, wasn't it? Mel, that was amazing. And she'd say, yeah, it was good. It wasn't nearly as powerful as a few weeks ago when you thought it was terrible. We are not good judges of success and failure. In fact, I will go so far as to say that I am a horrible judge of when I'm a success and a failure. I don't even know. And this is why we dress ourselves up like our brother to receive a blessing from our father or from each other. Is we are uncomfortable in our own skin. And as we get older, we should actually become more transparent. We should become more comfortable in our skin and who we are as children of God. And but I'm not there yet. But we don't know. That's the problem. So when you think you're succeeding, you could be failing. I mean, I'm not trying to say that in a harsh way, but I'm just saying often we think we're succeeding, like because we sound good. We're measuring it with standards, and we don't even necessarily know, you know. And this is why when he says having other people listening to you, they'll pull out things of you that you thought were weak, but somebody else says, that's not weak, that's amazingly unique about you. And they'll pull something out of you and say, that's beautiful, and you think it's totally ugly, or you're ashamed of it because of our standards. And our standards are often really off. That's my experience.
Yes.
My dad spoke in my life, and he said once, he said, love is the measuring stick for success. Love is the measuring stick God uses for success. And I've walked away from moments. I've had my wife do the same thing to me. My wife is a fiery woman, and she scares the hell out of me sometimes, literally. But I've had moments where I'm so close to the canvas, all I see are the broken brushstrokes in front of me, you know. But she's standing back 15 feet from the canvas, and she sees the full picture, you know. Sometimes we just see the few broken sentences in front of us, but God's seeing this whole story. And then there have been moments I walk off and I'm like, that was like, we played better than we've ever played ever, you know? And then you go back and you listen to a tape or you watch the video and you're like, oh, wow. We're not as awesome as we thought we were. It's not good for you to be alone. You're born for relationship. Everything God does is relational. Everything he does is relational. And you're born for this, and you can't do it by yourself.
Does anyone have any like quick follow-up questions to that? Yeah.
One of the biggest risks in my life right now is that I have, in my community, I have a lot of agnostic and atheist friends who I'm afraid to, you know, try and talk to them about God because they base all their beliefs off of, you know, scientific proven fact that our modern day believes to be true. And
where do you live?
North Carolina.
Okay. What city?
I live right outside of Charlotte in Huntersville.
Okay.
And so a lot of those things, I don't really know how to combat my beliefs into their lives, like with their beliefs, you know? And I don't know how to teach them and talk to them about God because I feel like they're just going to shoot me down with their own things that they have on their mind, you know?
Yeah.
Can I even add to, like, to even open that up a little bit more of, like, not just agnostic or, like, that type of environment, but also the environment within the church that doesn't understand the way we view worship and the way we view, you know, community, like...
Yeah, there's no difference between an atheist and... Atheists are just religious fundamentalists. And so, so a lot of your Charlotte friends that are religious fundamentalists, they're very similar to an atheist. I tell that to my atheist friends all the time. I had this atheist. My wife always has me talk to the atheists that hate Christians. And so a few weeks ago, this atheist walks up to me and says, "Oh, I hear you're a Christian." I said, "Yeah, I'm a Christian." And then he said, "I think Christians are..." And this is how we're going to start the conversation, really. "I think Christians are weak-minded people." I said, "Wow. Why? Why do you think that?" "Because they just don't want to think about things." I said, "Oh, that's interesting. It's crazy that you say that, because that's not my experience with Christians at all. I actually think that religious fundamentalists are weak-minded people, and easy answers are easily replaced. And they're easily replaced in atheism, and they're easily replaced in Islam, and they're easily replaced in Christianity. They're easily replaced because we just want to make easy answers. So what's a religious fundamentalist atheist say? "Well, if you don't see the world the way I see the world, then you're an idiot and you're not worth talking to and you're stupid." That's just having you just want to hang around the same people that think the same way. Socrates said about humanity that we'll only come to truth by face-to-face dialogue. Oswald Chambers said, "Purity, no man is born with purity or even pure thinking. Purity is the outcome of conflict." But if you never hang out with people that think differently than you, you're not going to have pure thinking. You're going to think you have good thinking, even great thinking. Like, have you ever talked to an atheist and you just say, "Well, the Bible says..." How far does that get you with your atheist friend? Now, you have something to teach the rest of us here. You see, because it doesn't get you anywhere. You can't just say the Bible says. I live in Milwaukee. It's not the Bible Belt. When I hang out with people, they're not like, "Oh, the Bible said so. Well, you should have said so." Your dialogue, a face-to-face dialogue, is important. And atheists don't like to be called religious fundamentalists, but they are. But on the Christian side, if you don't see the world the way I see it, you're going to hell. Or we have 42,000 parallels of denominations in the world today of Christianity. But like I said last night, the cross, the hope of the world is the cross. Because the cross is the intersection of opposites. It's Jesus is the only one that's ever taught that. This tension of opposites, it leads us to truth, guys. And if we want to just live in our easy answers, whether it's atheism or Islam or Christianity, we just want to live in our world of easy answers where nothing ever intersects, where there's never any tension, where your ideas are never questioned, well then, just have a good time in isolation. You can spend your whole life praying and reading the Bible by yourself in a room, and the older you get, you could do 25 years of doing that. And if you never have face-to-face dialogue, or like Jonathan says, relationship, where your ideas are questioned that you're getting in your prayer room with your Bible by yourself, what will happen in your life is you will just become a definer of everything and you'll lose the power of discovery. We discover the truth by hanging in dialogue with one another and by listening to opposite opinions to our own. And that's why we have to say, let the fear be gone. You don't have to be afraid of that. Jesus certainly wasn't afraid of that. Jesus didn't just hang out with people that thought the way he thought. He hung out with people that other people wouldn't necessarily hang out with. And he even assembled disciples that were from opposite groups of people with total opposite expectations. You see, and that tension, that cross, that's the hope of the cross. The cross has been made into a symbol of war, but it's not. It's really the symbol of true peace, intersecting opposites. So with atheism, the best way, you don't win an argument. Like, I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law is a Muslim. So for years, I would get together with him for coffee, and he'd want to argue about Christianity versus Islam and tell me all of his opinions about Israel and Palestine and then ask me what I thought and then yell at me and then we'd yell about, and then it's like all these things, right? And then one day the Lord says, when I woke up and I was going to meet with him, I don't want you to argue with him anymore. I want you to gaze at him until you, and this is very tricky for some people, and I'm sorry it is for you, but for me, I just listened to Jesus. I want you to gaze at him until you see me in him. And then I want you to tell him what you see. So I sat there in the coffee shop and I just kind of gazed at him. And he kept saying things to me. And it was like, because he wanted to incite a riot. He wanted to get me to get angry and to debate him. And I remember the day that the debate was over, guys. I said, you know the way you were with your son the other day? It just reminds me of Jesus in you. No, really, I did. Really? What reminded you of? Just the way you held him. He loves it when you hold him. I really see Jesus in you. And then as the discussion started to prolong, I started to realize, whoa, the debate's over. Now, they might think I'm crazy, but the debate's over if I believe that Jesus isn't my idea, but I believe that Jesus is living and resurrected and walking on the streets where we walk and living in our lives. And all of a sudden, no, Jesus is alive and real and like here and now, and you see him, and you see him in me, and the kingdom's in me. Yeah, the kingdom of God is in you. I see the kingdom of heaven in you. This is very tricky because some people get, fundamentalist Christians get real freaked out about this, and that's okay. You'd get freaked out about Jesus because remember, guys, that he said to people that had not yet accepted him yet, the kingdom of heaven is in you. So that's going to be tricky for you when you stand before Jesus. And they didn't say the sinner's prayer, Jesus. But you said the kingdom of heaven is in you. This, if you want to have an argument with an atheist, it's never going to get you anywhere. You're never going to win. You want to have an argument with a Muslim? You're going to win? No, you're not going to win, because even if you win the argument, you've lost, because the shame and the honor culture is, you can't win an argument. Jesus being alive, you know, transcending all the arguments, speaking in that way, tangible, love, relationship. Do you know how much that I see in you as a human being, how much I love you? This is what changes everything.
I think just to tag on that, I feel like faithfulness and consistency is really big, and like agendaless love, you know, just to pick him out. I see Jeremy Perrigo back there. Raise your hand, Jeremy. Sexy sax man. He's going to play sax with me tonight. Yeah, he's amazing. He lived in Turkey for 7 years. 7 years? 8 years? In the most heavily concentrated Muslim nation in the world, per capita. And with a goal to see this happen there. It's like there's less than a few thousand Christians there, but yet it's has the most biblical history of any other nation besides Israel. But the way in which these guys like broke in, and now there's like cities all over Turkey worshiping like this. Like indigenous Turks singing day and night to Jesus with their language and in their style. And I don't like just watching their journey, like they just were consistent and faithful in their love. You know, and I feel like that has, like, we always want like quick answers. We always want like quick results. You know, we want to put it on a data sheet and send it out to our friends and supporters and get more hits and get more likes. And we want to wow everybody with the greatest testimonies and stories. But sometimes the slow burn of faithfulness is what brings lasting impact. And years and years and years and years and years of them living in that culture with those people speaks volumes. Like they won hearts over that can't be won in a moment or can't be won in an argument. It takes years of faithfulness.
Amen, Sean. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're so powerful.
He is powerful. Stand up. Let's give this guy a hand.
Yeah.
So, if you want to know about reaching Muslims, or reaching Hindus, or reaching atheists, talk to him. Serious. Find him. If you want to reach the Muslim communities in your cities, I know a lot of you here in the UK especially, talk to him. It's amazing insight.
Or actually, what you were saying, if you want to reach people that you might only see growth of 3-5 people in a year, talk to him, because it's the consistency of those kind of people where they just see a growth of very small growth, and then it's like growing a perennial versus garden versus growing an annual. There, you get no pop from where you're at. Hang out with people like that because they know how to grow perennial gardens where you get no pop for 4 years, 5 years, and then you can't stop the thing. Right? You want to hang out with people like that. They'll teach you.
Is it cool if I switch gears again with a different question, kind of a different side of everything? Something I really enjoyed is, as I've talked to a lot of you guys who are playing this year, is you're really investing in your sound, and you're investing in recording, you're investing in capturing what you're doing, and actually like giving it to your community and putting it up available for the world to see. And so I wanted to ask a question in regards to that, because I know all you guys have really invested in your sound. It's been a blessing to people that you could never reach just in your own community. And so, I guess first, like, what are some practical ways that, like, if we believe, this is me personally included, like, if we believe that our music is for other people, what are some that are outside of our community? What are some tangible steps that we can take instead of just going out there and just, like, going full, you know, full on, like, a lot of us don't have the finances to do, some practical things to be able to take steps towards, like, recording albums, being able to, yeah, release your music to other people?
That's a Tim Jupp question.
Maybe even some history of like how you guys started with that.
It's the birthing. It's the birthing of Delirious. That's that question. Anyways,
I think the music scene. I think it's just. I think sometimes it's a little overrated. Like sometimes what we, like the whole, getting your music. You know what I mean? It's like the, like
you don't need 30 grand to do a record.
Yeah, like, so. Like, like in our day, I don't know, just turn on 80. Some recorders in a room. Like, this is the key. Find people that don't need to be manufactured, that they just are powerful, like, as they are. and throw some mics up in a room and just record them. And don't let anybody tell you that it needs to be more than what just... It's real simple. Like, it actually touches people like that. Just like that. It touches people. And start there. But too often, you get these guys, you walk into a room and you're bawling your eyes out, and then they go, man, I'm going to the studio. And it's going to be like... And it just... It sound, it's like it does... It's like it doesn't even sound like them. It sounds like something else. And they can't sustain that anyway because it's not even who they are. So I always say, like somebody will say, I want to do a record. I say, well, look, where are you playing? Like, I'd love to come and just see you play, like, and watch you and see how, like, how good are they? You know, start there. Like, the very, like, just simple, like, when you're just playing in your kitchen with your family around you and you're just worshiping together. What is powerful about that? And what is unique about that? And I would start there with just, you know, my first record was an accident. They were setting up for another person to record. And then I was leading some worship and I was supposed to do like 35 minutes for a youth gathering and you were there. And we went like 4 hours.
This is the Key of David.
You guys remember that album? Yeah.
It was absolutely retarded. And I can't even listen to it. It's like, what am I doing? But what was I doing? I don't know what I was doing. It was really exciting. I mean, but then it's all recorded. And then this friend of mine, while I bounced on a trampoline with his daughters, he hand-mixed the whole project. And then we're like, let's send this out to the world. What a ridiculous idea. You know what I mean? And then it just like, and yeah. And then the Faith record was the same way. We said, hey, let's find some prayer people to come to the church. You were there?
Yeah.
And then we just like turned on the tape recorder and I had some songs and some friends and we weren't that good at all. And we just started playing our songs with a bunch of people and spontaneous things happened and then we recorded it and then we had it mixed and then people put it out and it is what it is. It's not manufactured, but what it has mistakes all over it and it's riddled with mistakes and sometimes I'm even embarrassed to listen to myself on it. You know what I mean? And it's just, oh, it's just, wow. Oh, an overdub would have been it would have been beautiful to have had overdubs, but it wasn't overdubbed and it wasn't perfect and it wasn't even necessarily that great. It was what it was.
It was an encounter.
Yeah.
Is what it was.
And I think a lot of times we manufacture, but you have to remember whatever a producer manufactures you into, you have to sustain it. And so if it is
dun,
just
dun.
So if it is what you are, it is what you are. But so that's the first place is always with music. What are you? Who are you? These are really important questions, you know?
Yeah, I'll just say, I think Jason's been such a pioneer in this area, probably like unintentionally, but like just to be able to, I think that there's like, we've reached a level where like the plastic sheen of worship is like, people like want to like, they just want authenticity, you know? And they want, like, you remember when Ben Pasley and those guys like entered the worship circle? Remember kind of that whole like movement of like enter the worship circle and djembes and guitars and they're like out of tune and the djembes are like not even on beat, but it's just like this. You guys know what I'm talking about? Like, you know, and then the Lord's like doing that again, you know, with, you know, the United Pursuit guys and like some of the stuff that Jason's done. And I just looked at Jason personally growing up and I just thought, man, that's so amazing. I don't even have like And at the time, I didn't even have like that band or that dynamic. But when I was in college, I just recorded a project for, I think it was $600, just with my guitar. And I found a piano player who's my roommate. And we just went into a big house and we just recorded it in one day, you know, and it was just heartfelt and honest. And then the Lord used that to enable to fund and finance future projects, you know, and it just began to grow small. And so sometimes I cringe when I see these guys going out, taking out loans for like $50,000 to do a record. And I'm like mortgaging their house. Like, don't do that, please. You know, just start with.
Yeah, well, I was going to say this because I don't want it to sound like I actually think I've just matured enough into who I am that having a producer for the same reason as having community could be very helpful. Why? To get the best out of who I actually am. But if you don't know who you are, you wouldn't get married. Right? You need to know who you are before you enter into relationship. At least some of who you are. Right? And then there's other parts of who you are that you'll learn and it'll pull the best out of you. But I just wanted to say that so that, as I know that was a little harsh against it, but you never start at manufacturing something that you're not. Start at who you are and find out who you are, really, and what you're called to. But for me, I've been doing this for 13 years. I've never used a producer. I just get together with the guys. I'm not saying that that's the way to do it. I probably should have started using a producer 3 or 4 years ago for the same reason as John's saying we should live in community. Do you get the point? Because it starts to then question you for the same reason that I said we need to live like this. So it can question me a bit and say, hey, is that pulling out all of who you really are? And this is actually really beautiful about you. But when you're young and you're just starting, the danger is that you don't even know who you are. And then you have somebody
tell you who you are.
Yeah, and they manufacture you into who you are, and then you have to go out and be that thing that you're not. That really sucks.
But like Clay, raise your hand, Clay. He's playing keys with me, and like he just did a project, and like just because he has, you know, like just songs that the Lord's given him, and he just did this project, and it's amazing. My wife listens to it all the time, and my four-year-old girl says his album's the ballerina album. She's like your biggest fan. She says they're all ballerina songs, which is a good thing, you know? But, like, I just love it that there's a greater accessibility now than there's ever been in history to do projects, and I just think you should just do them, you know? Not even because people are... Not even because they're going to get the highest hits on iTunes, but just because the Lord's worthy of it, of your song. So
yeah, I want to tag a little bit on Jason, and it's fun because I've kind of done the opposite in some ways of what he's done, but same heart. We've had a producer a part of almost all of our projects. And I think some of the Psalms were moments that they were just spontaneous combustions where David's just, he's just pouring everything out. That's why he put scribes in the temple to write down these moments that he was having. And then I think if you read Psalm 119, that wasn't just one moment pouring out worship. It's this intricate, handwritten masterpiece of literature and of poetry and worship. And it was crafted over a long time. It's a long psalm. It wasn't just a one moment experience. So I think it's not either or, guys. It really is both and. God loves the wild, crazy stuff, and he also loves the moments where we go and we craft and we shape. Yeah. But I think for you guys and where you're at right now, here's the most important thing. Proverbs says that an inheritance that's quickly gained in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. And I want to paint this in a visual picture. We got to visit some orange groves in Florida, and we're walking with this man in these orange groves, and he said, hey, I want to take you to some of our new trees that we're planting. There's this citrus bug that's destroying citrus worldwide. It actually has the potential to wipe out oranges worldwide. And he's growing these new trees to try to fight against it. And he's been doing this for 15 years, working on these trees. And he's so proud of these trees. And it's like one of these Jesus moments. He's this huge, big South Florida guy, but he loves these trees. And he walks over and he shows us these trees. And these trees are like 4 to 5 years old. And he looks at us and they have all these fruit on the tree. And these guys come over and start picking the fruit off the tree, but it's green. It's not actually fully developed. And we're like, why are they picking the fruit? It's green. He said, well, for the first 4 to 5 years, we pick their fruit before it turns ripe. And we're like, well, why do you do that? He said, because the tree will spend all of its energy on the fruit and not on its roots. And so the first 5 years, we pull its fruit off before it's ripe, so it'll keep sinking its roots deeper. And we're like, oh my goodness. And how? And we worship success. Like, we worship success in our culture. American Idol, we worship success. And we think you have to attain success before you're 24 years old and you're not sexy and cool anymore, right? But maybe the most fruitful years in the kingdom are when we're 40 and we're 50 and we're 60 and we're sitting at the city gates singing our legacy to the next generation. And that we would, on the scales of our heart, what weighs more, the praise of God or the praise of the Lord? And that there would be moments where you're like, these oranges are for the Lord. And like, I'm giving this fruit back to the Lord so my roots can go deep. And it's a scary place to jump in front of into a studio if your roots aren't deep. Because there's sharks in those waters and it'll rob your identity and it'll rob your heart. So, but then also, I love what Jason said. Are you good enough to record? Get some friends in your life. Take your iPhone out and just record something you're doing and put it in front of someone who's a little bit ahead of you and go, am I good enough to record? Because you might not be good enough yet, right? You might not be good enough yet. And being able to have people in your life who can see where you're going and call out your greatness, but also say you need to grow up in these areas.
My father-in-law used to say this about that too. And I hated this when he said this when I was younger, because I really had a focused agenda on what I wanted to do with my life. And he used to say, I just want you to, when I look at your life, Jason, I just want you and Rachel to find what you're called to. Because one of the worst things that could ever happen to a person is that they would be successful at something they were never created for. Only old people teach you stuff like that. You know what I mean? But to hear that, if you find out that that's not what you're created for, or that's not, you know what I mean? That's not a bad thing. It's only going to more quickly get you into what you really created for. And that's really important. One of the worst things that can ever happen to a person is you become successful at something you were never really created for.
I love Mother Teresa. It's an amazing quote. She says, I don't pray for success. I ask for faithfulness.
Yeah, so I wanted to open up, and I know some people moved in, but I want to open some questions for just the 24-3 guys. So if you're playing if you have played a 24-3 set and you're a musician, feel free to ask a question. But does anyone have a question that came like prepared to ask today? Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, right at the beginning we were talking about sustainability, and it was taken in the context of sustainability of our ministry. But thinking about the next generation, we're currently in a church in France, leading worship there, and we've taken under our wing some of the young musicians, sort of 10 years, 11 year old, and the culture there does not lend itself to young musicians kind of getting together and playing together. And I'm just wondering if you've got any suggestions, any input on how can we look for longer sustainability than just us, looking to the next generation?
Do you have coffee at your meetings? Okay, good.
It's so unbelievable. Just this is so random, but you're English. Are you English? It's crazy. I could have swore I was like in a foreign country. See, like I needed an interpreter. Isn't that crazy? Like, and you totally understood what she said. I missed like half of what she asked. It's so amazing how we all speak the same language, and I couldn't. Your accent is so awesome. I feel like I was almost spellbound. Like to a U.S. American, I feel like when we hear that accent, you almost feel like you're in a movie. Like it's unbelievable.
Everything's a movie here.
I was just listening.
It's all
to
a movie.
I know it is.
It's one huge movie. It's a romance.
I'm sorry. I didn't even hear her question.
You want me to repeat it? You want me to repeat it, Jason, or kind of sum it up?
Yeah, sum it
so
up.
So pretty much the question was like, you know, how, like in speaking of, and correct me if I'm wrong, in speaking of like sustainability, how do they like reach down to the next generation in a culture that doesn't support young musicians getting together, like the community? Is that the best way to generalize it? Okay.
Finding like a central rally point for like how you can just practically speaking, you know, where you can set aside an afternoon or an evening and make sure food's there. Do what? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, help them connect, play together. Yeah. I think some of worship is like so, it's a lot of it is so caught more than it is taught. So like I learned a lot, like just watching, you know, being 16 and just like watching Jason and like being in that atmosphere where I could catch it. It wasn't like I had we're going to meet and have our worship class, you know, once a week, but it was more just like, and a lot of it has to do with hunger. Like if they're really hungry to learn, I think that they'll get what they came for. But I think a lot of it is caught. So like if you can get, you know, got some guys in France or some fathers or some people that really carry or embody what you guys are going for, to just get around them and like, and have them rub shoulders together and worship together and like catch it. I think it does wonders. It's amazing. Like a lot of stuff is taught. I think sometimes we feel like everything needs to be taught. We're in like a very pastoral teaching kind of culture, but some of the biggest spiritual things I've ever learned, they've been in atmospheres where they've been caught, you know, it hasn't really necessarily been in a, so that's what I would just say. Try to facilitate an atmosphere, you know, with what you guys do, where they can come and catch it and throw them out there. Say, hey, we're going to do 6 hours of worship and you're going to do the first hour and you're going to do the second, and like just throw them out there, and like maybe they're not ready for it, but the Holy Spirit will teach them, you know, and they'll learn together and stretch them a little bit, I think is good.
Anybody else have anything to add to that? Jonathan, Jason,
showing people, inspiring, like with my little kids, I've already started like the process. Even if they don't like it, they don't like classical. No, and I'm like, my daughter's been yelling at me about this because I'm forcing her to learn classical piano, and she thinks it's worthless. I mean, nobody does that in church. You get what I'm saying? Nobody does that on the stage. It's because we're not gutsy enough to, Emma. Maybe we should. It's like, so jazz music, lifting their vision higher than G, C, D, and E minor, lifting their vision higher may take letting them listen to jazz music or letting them listen to things that are beyond them, right? And then, oh man, check this out. This is amazing. You know, and unfortunately at this moment in time, it might not be something that's churchy. Do you know what I mean? But it's risky, right? And let them see that it's okay to take those risks. And then implement that back into what you're able to do, what you're capable of doing. And then risk. Another thing is, just a little thing. I play with a lot of musicians that are, for years, that are really great musicians. And what I find with really great musicians, you never tell them what to do, great musicians. Because with a really great musician, it's more about finding out who they are and what they can express, and don't get, but, and if you tell them what to do, you'll actually get less out of them because they'll be so focused on what you told them to do that they won't listen anymore, right? But a really poor musician, it's better for them to just learn two or three songs really well so that they're not looking at the page anymore, so that they can start to really play music too. You know, like really play. Do less, you know, in the worship, you know, than you know, and actually play music, actually get to the musical part. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's so, like Jacob last night, he was so terrified to go out, you know, playing, you know, and the first night he would go, he's only played with me twice, so he would go inward when things got a little rocky. And then I just jump out on the stage and just go. And I told him the second night, I was like, who cares if we fail? I don't care if you, like, you're great. So open up and listen to the room. At one point, he just tore the thing out of his ear. He didn't want to listen to the in-ear anymore. And he's just listening to the room, right? Because he's a great musician. And all it took was him to just let it go and let it rip. And we're gonna crash and burn. And it's okay to totally crash and burn. Like, why are we so afraid? You're great. You're amazing. And about the moment you think we're crashing and burning, we're going to fly. Yeah. That's the way it goes. So it's like with great musicians, man, we can do it perfect. So we'll be okay with just doing it perfect. Perfect isn't what we need. We want to do something beyond ourselves. You know what I mean? And do something that, man, I could never do that again. That was crazy. I can't believe what did I just do? That was amazing, you know? So that's and often you'll find that I know studio musicians, it's like they'll be playing. I know I don't do this often, but I have friends that are in studio a lot, and they'll play something the first time or the second time, and the producer will say, no, that was it. And they'll say, what was it? You know? Because they're so focused. And when they're not even thinking, they just fly and they go. So the more skilled the musician, you almost have to train them to get their mind off of the music and just play music and just go for it. And the less the skill, the more they need a little bit, like, do less to get them to where they can really fly.
Yeah, I think really teaching too these young ones to love music. Anything you love will give up its secrets. And for them to really learn how to love music. And also, I don't know what the stage looks like in your church, but like finding other places that they can, where the stage is not the only outlet. I know for me, like I learned to fly, like leading worship in a home group that we had for about 4 years. And we just met, it was like 30 to 50 of us. And those were the moments that I learned to fly without the pressure of being on a stage, without the pressure of we had to stay within these time frames. And it was a place where when I failed, it wasn't that messy. There wasn't a lot of people watching. So I don't know if these guys do a lot of, just for them to get together and at their homes to meet together and worship together like that is a beautiful place to learn how to fly.
I think we're gonna go ahead and wrap it up there. I know you could probably ask a lot more questions, but start a little bit late. And I want to be respectful for these guys' time. But I just want to give them a round of applause and thank you. Yeah, I just want to, like, bless you guys and just affirm, like, thank you for letting us glean off. And we're excited about, like, learning things from you and as we move to the future, but also about, like, being there to support you guys and just press you on into new things, pioneering. So thank you.
Hi, this is just a call for anyone that's going to the Burns Summit after this. There's a few people that are here that don't have lifts. If you don't have a lift to the summit after David's tent tomorrow, if you could just meet me in the front and we'll try and sort something out. Thanks.
Best thing to do would be like when you get back or like.